Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Tesla's showroom showdowns, Chinese EVs are all in on DeepSeek AI, and the UK's electric bus adoption. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you about the odd and illegal place that an Audi race car was recently found. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information for Wednesday, 19th of February. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Patreon supporters get the shows ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Well, last week I told you, I think Friday on Saturday's show, actually, that there were some protests planned against Tesla showrooms. And, well, now the weekend seems to have passed off peacefully, but we do have some updates on that. Tesla's CEO Elon Musk's actions in his role with the US government are having repercussions at Tesla showrooms, inspired by a small demonstration against Musk and the Doge, D-O-G-E, in Maine. Joan Donovan put together a digital flyer for a protest at a Tesla showroom in Boston. Well, this initiative quickly expanded, leading to over three dozen similar protests against Tesla in the US. The protests are a response to the CEO's controversial actions with the government, the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, although it's not actually a government department. Musk has been criticized for granting his team complete access to things like confidential taxpayer information and classified data, leading to significant consequences such as the halt of crucial US Agency for International Development programs that provided medical aid. Additionally, Musk's efforts are undermining the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which could have regulated his new plans to provide payment services. Well, a website named Tesla Takedown was then created to facilitate the organization of local protests and encourages Tesla stock and car owners to divest from the company. But if you own a Tesla, would you? Are you bothered about what the CEO does? Do you just judge it for being a pretty good car or a very good car, depending on how you view your car? Or do you view it as something else? You know, this isn't, you know, something small like the kind of sandwich that you buy at lunchtime. The car is often the second biggest purchase we make in our life. And for many people, the car that they drive is not for everybody, but for some people, it's an extension of themselves, a reflection of their values. I mean, it's, you know, I like sitting in my Swedish Polestar and I kind of look around. It's all a bit scandy. I like the material choice. If I didn't have that, I'd probably have a Volvo, to be honest with you. So, you know, we buy our cars often with our heart, not our head. And therefore, do people look at you if you're driving a Tesla and make some assumptions? And do you care? Or not really, because they can go and get a life. But it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because cars are part of our lives, our personalities. Not for everybody. For some people, they're just transport. But for others, it's different. Tesla's sales have seen a downturn in 2024. They were down 1.1% after growing 50%. You know, that was the guarantee till the end of the decade, and that was all quietly forgotten about. Well, in China, there's a growing market for innovative electric vehicles, and Tesla's appeal is waning. Similarly, here in the UK, Musk's political statements saying that our Prime Minister should be jailed have led to 60% of potential EV buyers to reconsider purchasing a Tesla in the UK. His support for controversial political movements, the hard right, the far right in Germany, is negatively impacting sales there. So I think he judged the political temperature and mood in America, you know, pretty well, of course. He was on the winning side, so to speak, if you want to make it that tribal. Now, over here in Europe, there's some suggestion that he has sort of misread the room, as it were. And many people are going, yeah, no thanks, you can stay out of our politics, dude. Despite these challenges, there's no indication that he's even concerned about Tesla's future or its public perception. Employees and investors are reportedly worried about the company's direction and reputation. Neil Minow from Value Edge Advisors, for one, expressed dismay. Sorry, Nell Minow, her dismay, dismay at Musk's actions affecting Tesla's image so severely that she donated her Tesla shares to charity. So it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that that the car industry is so tied up in, you know, it's always been, I mean, car and car culture has often crossed over with mainstream culture, general culture that we live in. And this is kind of political culture and car culture and, you know, everything combining. So, you know, fascinating to look at. Does it really matter at the end of the day? You might say yes, you might say no. I'd like to hear from you. Let's move on. And in the race to captivate consumers with the highest tech possible, over a dozen Chinese EVs are now adopting artificial intelligence from a company called DeepSeek, which really over the last 4 weeks has become the darling of that world. This move aims to enhance their vehicles with digital features. Industry giants like BYD, Stellantis-supported Leapmotor, declaring their intention to integrate DeepSeek. Now, this isn't an AI story, by the way. It's just I use AI now for all of my internet search. So I actually use one called Perplexity, which I pay for, and it has a real-time internet search. And I have entirely replaced my Google searches with that, because rather than a Google search, which gives you a bunch of results, some of which are sponsored, and you've got to wade through and then go onto certain websites and go through, actually, the AI, if I ask a question, which is, you know, something about the EV industry that I'm, you know, not sure about, or maybe, you know, when was the launch date of a certain car? Google could probably have found me that information. I'd have clicked on some website links and found it myself. But with AI, you can ask a question and it'll not only answer it, but add context around it. And it's, you know, it's nearly always accurate. It does make mistakes. And so DeepSeek is the latest one in that kind of area that is, I won't go into it, but it's a lot cheaper to run, as it were, and it sort of moves the game forward. These models like the DeepSeek V3 and DeepSeek R1 stand out because they deliver much advanced capabilities at lower costs and lower computational demands than what is expected from large language projects. LLM technology provides generative AI like OpenAI's ChatGPT and DeepSeek's chatbot. Now, how does this work with the car? Well, the ultimate eyes on the road technology, if you get my drift. Not even feeling your way around with a, you know, steering wheel button or something, let alone having to take your eyes off the road and look at a big screen. It's just talking to your car, saying, turn on my seat heater. And I know people say, oh, you can say things like, hey, car, my bottom's feeling cool. And it will, you know, it will understand it and go, oh, well, I'll make it warm then. But actually, even if you just use basic commands, you know, like, hey, turn on the seat heater, show me the rear view camera, whatever, things like that. AI is much better equipped than some of the existing technology that you have to use specific phrases. Otherwise, it doesn't, you know, computer says no, basically. With a growing appetite amongst Chinese drivers for intelligent vehicles, the latest high tech has pushed leading EV manufacturers to focus on enhancing autonomy and digital functions, where some of the Western car makers have been a little left behind. Some of the domestic car Chinese makers have really pushed this forward, and particularly the younger buyers in China, this is exactly what they want from their cars. Fate Zhang, the founder of CNEV Post, a Shanghai-based EV information provider, highlighting the critical role of DeepSeek's technology in this competitive shift, noting that vehicles lacking advanced AI would risk losing market share or being even completely ousted from the competition. This development marks a shift towards prioritizing smart vehicles over things like, you know, the engineering or even the badge on the front of the car. Isn't that interesting? This is where the EV market is going. But what about moving around on EV buses if you don't want to do it in your own car? Well, the UK has become one of the top purchasers of electric buses in Europe, thanks to investments by major cities like Manchester, London and Oxford. These cities are part of a broader movement towards sustainable public transport, with even traditionally slower regions joining the shift. For instance, First Bus dedicated £60 million to make its West of England depots electric ready, adding 98 new electric buses to the fleet. This move is supported by the Zebra funding scheme, promising continued growth in electric bus sales across the country. Last year alone, the UK introduced over 1,500 new zero-emission buses into service. Not only positions the UK as a leader in green public transportation, but one of Europe's market leaders as well. Mike Hawes is from the SMMT, the kind of lobby organisation of the car industry, highlighting this achievement as a step towards the net zero targets, noting the government funding has been crucial in revitalising the bus sector and increasing zero emission deliveries. This progress is essential for improving air quality. I can't tell you, when I used to work in London, obviously, life is different now. I've got a 2 and a 6-year-old. I work mostly from home. I get to take them to school every day and pick them up every day. Life is good, my friends. And I've had to work pretty hard to make it intentionally that good. I grew up with my dad being a paramedic and working nights and shifts and didn't see him and stuff like that. And it's fine. I had a great childhood, but I was like, you know what? When I'm a dad, I just want to be around a bit more, because then they'll grow up and then I can go back and work 24/7. And so when I worked in London and I was, you know, commuting at rush hour and all that kind of stuff, it was all pre-kids. And we lived up in London. It was a very fast-paced lifestyle. I tried to bike everywhere. It's about a six-mile ride in from southwest London, sort of Richmond, Mortlake, Barnsley area. We moved around a bit into Soho when I worked in Golden Square. And the worst things as a cyclist were the taxis, which are all being replaced, and the buses. They absolutely, like, just the black smog, smoke right at your eye level or lung level. I hate to think the damage I did to myself for years of cycling in. And I can't tell you how important that is. Like, if you don't experience it, and I'm very lucky here, I just sit at home and do this now. But like the damage it must have done to my health and other people's health. Like, we put our kids in little pushchairs exactly at exhaust height and push them around cities, and we realise the damage it's doing. So it's a really important bit of work that's being done there. I used to hate if a bus came alongside me on the bike, I was like, oh no, I'm going to get a lung full of black soot here, aren't I? And the same with the old black cabs as well. And luckily, they're all being replaced with the hybrid ones as well. So that is super good. Right, coming up, we'll talk about Ford Ranger and a big competitor in Australia, the BYD Shark 6. Stick around, back in a mo. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Patreon supporters get the shows ad-free. You can be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Well, later this year, the Ford Ranger will debut its first plug-in hybrid model, filling its significant gap in the lineup. Been a long time coming, this Ford Ranger plug-in hybrid. Details are under wraps. The Aussie government approval document, though, came out yesterday, providing insights into what to expect. It's going to be made in South Africa. Two styles, a double cab chassis and a dual cab ute. Of course, ute culture pretty big in Australia. I mean, if you're a tradie and you need a ute, I totally understand. And some of those vehicles aren't very nice to drive, by the way. But they're working vehicles. Otherwise, people buy them because they're lifestyle vehicles, although some of the Aussie utes aren't exactly lifestyle-y like the American truck culture. But the government filing reveals the vehicle has a turbocharged 2.3-litre four-cylinder engine, 10-speed transmission, and the hybrid system has a 75-kilowatt electric motor. The battery, 11.8 kilowatt hours, positioned beneath the bed, designed between the chassis rails. The setup aims for electric-only driving of about 28, 30 miles or 45 k's. Ford Australia sharing further specifications of the Ranger plug-in hybrid. Towing capacity of 3,500 kilograms, with pretty much consistency with other models in the Ranger lineup. Of course, it has Ford Pro Power on board, which is the branding for the getting power outlets in the cabin and the external 3.45 kilowatt outlets in the bed as well. Now, that's an important vehicle, but there is a vehicle that is kind of taking off in Australia right now, and that's BYD revealing that its Shark 6 plug-in hybrid pickup truck has a significant number of orders in Australia, up to 6,000, we think, already. The company anticipates the numbers will surpass 10,000 by the end of the year, and there's a good reason, because the Shark 6 is already providing big competition to trucks like the Isuzu D-Max, Toyota Hilux, and Ford Ranger. So what is it, if you haven't heard me rave about the Shark 6, and I've not driven this vehicle, by the way, but all the reviews look really good. It's a plug-in hybrid, a range extender, so you can add electricity to it. It has a 1.5-litre turbo petrol engine, but it's got electric motors on both axles, and so loads of performance, really torquey, you know, more torque than a Raptor. It's crazy powerful, but drives like a car. The setup delivers total power of 135 kilowatts, tons of torque. And like I say, it's driven by the electric motors, but at highway speeds, it can couple the engine to drive the wheels, which is a bit more efficient way of using combustion. But the engine can't drive the wheels at lower speeds. It's always electric until you get up to highway speeds, and it can take over. David Smitherman, the CEO of the BYD importer EV Direct, expressing enthusiasm about the performance in the market. It performs really well. If anything it can't do, it's not a tonner. It's not a one tonner, mate. So you can't quite get a tonner. It's 750 kg in the bed, which is fine. And I think it tows a little less than some. And so if you really want a hardcore working vehicle, then there's just a little smidge on the spec sheet that it won't hit. But actually, if you use that at the weekends, then take your family around, or you're just a tradie that wants a decent vehicle that's very low cost to run, like 2 litres of fuel per 100 kilometres, this thing's doing really well. Okay, let's move on. And European luxury brands are falling and domestic brands are rising in China. We tried to read the tea leaves, so to speak, out of China. And in a recent shift within China's car market, passenger vehicle sales have dropped down 32% from the previous month in January and 12% compared to the same period last year. So it's still 1.8 million sold, but actually the downturn was particularly impacted in the luxury car segment. And that is experiencing increased competition from domestic Chinese brands. A notable development is Geely surpassing BYD in January in the premium sector. European luxury car makers, so Mercedes-Benz, BYD, Audi, they are finding it really, really hard to maintain their market share in China right now. Last year was tough, and this year has just started the same, really, if not even worse. Diminished market presence as younger Chinese buyers, and even those in the premium sector, want electric vehicles increasingly from those domestic brands, as I mentioned a little earlier ago. So EVs grew year over year. They were down a little bit in China in January based on December, but it was the end of year push, so we're not too worried about that. You've got to smooth these things out. There'll be modest growth in the car market generally in China, but the EV market is predicted to obviously still fly in China this year. Okay, let's move on and talk about affordable electric vehicles, why buying a used EV can save you a lot of money. EVs are offer the best driving experience. You know, when you have to go back, if you've been driving EV for a while and go back to having combustion in someone else's car, a hire car, whatever, you're like, well, this sucks. It's a really thrilling experience to drive an EV. Even cheap, basic ones are way better than your average car. Combining the acceleration of a supercar with loads of tech, they're also cheaper to operate and maintain. However, the higher initial cost of EVs can be a deterrent for many potential buyers. All vehicles, including EVs, lose value over time, but this depreciation slows significantly after about 3 years. This period represents the ideal opportunity at the minute in the EV market. So the three-year-old vehicles have had quite steep depreciation post-pandemic, a lot more supply on the market. The market isn't quite ready for more people to go EV. So by this time, the steep initial depreciation occurred, but a three-year-old EV is still in amazing mechanical condition. There's not much to go wrong. You're always still within manufacturer warranties, which can be 6, 8, 10 years sometimes on the battery, and sometimes, you know, for the whole vehicle as well. So check the EV that you're buying and the manufacturer's warranty. It can have quite generous mileage limits as well. But if you're buying a low-mileage three-year-old EV, it can feel like a new car. Many EVs are capable of getting software updates, so it does feel like a new car. So a three-year-old EV is, at the minute, tending to be the sweet spot in the used EV market. They increase their functionality over time, and they still feel new. They're still under warranty, but they've had a big depreciation because of, again, supply and demand and cars coming off of lease agreements and things like that. So consider these factors, and purchasing a used EV 3 years old at the minute is the sweet spot smart financial move, allowing you to enjoy nearly all the benefits of a new EV, and it's about half the cost of a new one. So if you're going to go EV shopping this year and you're sort of looking at your options, that's one thing that is doing very well at the moment. Now, let's talk NASCAR and EVs. Not actually racing electric in NASCAR, because if you ask me, they shouldn't. Stick with loud V8 things and the thunder round, because we don't have to do everything EV. But anyway, NASCAR wants to cater for people turning up to watch their races in an EV. So they're partnered with Florida Power and Light Companies, Evolution Commercial Charging Solutions partner, and ABB as well, to put 30 Level 2 chargers at their Daytona Beach headquarters. That's great news. So even if you are a supporter of NASCAR, like I love racing of all sorts. Yes, it burns things, but it's okay. It's okay. You still want to drive your EV to work, because EVs are fast and more powerful and fun. You can now charge your car when you get to NASCAR. Used by employees and industries as well. Riley Nelson, NASCAR's head of sustainability, they do have one, highlighted the organization's dedication to sustainability, noting the collaboration supports the electrification of things around the sport, even if you're not racing electrically. And like I say, I don't think NASCAR should hurry towards electrification. The introduction of EV chargers at their headquarters aligns with general motorsport sustainability principles. Things like sustainable racing fuels and recycling at the track and energy-saving technologies in their facilities. All right, let's move on and go to New York next, where the Metropolitan Transit Authority, the MTA, is adding 265 electric buses from New Flyer to its fleet, including 193 of the 40-footers, the Excelsior Charge NG buses, and 72 of the 60-foot models. part of MTA's plan, unveiled 2 years ago, to convert its entire fleet of almost 6,000 buses to zero-emission vehicles by 2040. This order follows an initial acquisition of 205 zero-emission buses. These ones are equipped with NMC packs, so nickel manganese cobalt batteries, up to 520 kilowatt hours. They're big packs, but they're big vehicles. And they're placed on top of the bus in some cases as well, and in the propulsion compartment to optimize space and efficiency too. Charging them is pretty flexible. You can either use the roof-mounted pantograph rails or a plug-in method if those vehicles aren't being used at certain times of the day. And finally, Audi. I mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast. Audi is currently embroiled, and the PR people are trying to head this one off with a bit of bad news about one of their vehicles. They're dealing with a bit of environmental controversy after a very expensive rally car. Now, it was called the Audi RSQ e-tron Hybrid, and they built it to go racing with and rallying with and do Dakar and stuff. And it's been discovered, abandoned, sadly. I mean, I would have had it abandoned, but unfortunately in an unauthorized illegal dumping waste site in Czech. The rubbish, which was traced back to a German recycling company called Roth, was supposed to consist solely of plastic, according to the important certificates and things. However, there's other bits of waste which tells a different story. There was the Audi race car. There was parts of wind turbines, aircraft, car components, circuit boards, copper wires, and all sorts. And so, bit of an embarrassment one for Audi, because obviously they build these cars, they're all flashy, they, you know, go racing in the desert and things like that, and you sort of wonder, well, what happens? Do they go to a museum, or they go back and, well, no, they're done with it, and by the look of it, went through all the proper, no, Audi are pointing out, look, we went through the proper processes of having these vehicles recycled, using reputable companies, we don't know how it's been put in an illegal waste dump. But the RSQ e-tron was the one that the Swedish motorsport legend Mattias Ekström drove to ninth place in the Dakar in 2022. And like I said, look at Audi, if you're done with a vehicle and you don't know what do we do with it? We can't race it anymore and nobody wants it. I'm here. I'd have had it for you. We could have used it for something on the podcast. That's your show for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East. National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, and Octopus Electroverse. Global public charging made simple with one app and one map. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.